Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, founder and CEO of Rise Up For You, Nadalina Nazarene.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Kayla Diana. I am Mark Leger, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Bedside manners. Now, there's something I haven't heard in a long time. Bedside manners. So I used to hear people say things like when they would go to the hospital, they would say things like, oh, the doctor had great bedside manner, or the doctor had horrible bedside manner. And I haven't thought a lot about bedside manner until actually a couple months ago when I was trying to say something like bedside manner. So for those who don't know, bedside manner, according to the American Heritage Dictionary, is the attitude and conduct of a physician in the presence of a patient, or the ability of a medic or doctor to interact with his or her patient, or the manner or conduct of a physician in the presence of a patient. I think you kind of get that. The doctor would come to the bedside and they could be pleasant and have a good way of introducing themselves or talking about the issue or making suggestions, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what a doctor does, is have bedside, because the patient obviously is at the bed and the doctor is standing by the side. So how does one say that when it's a situation like this? So I literally thought about this when I had to call a plumber for a toilet problem. And I called a particular plumbing company that I had used before because they have these qualities. So the plumber came to the door, said hello, I think might have shaken my hand. I wasn't really paying attention. I was on the phone and I did say hello as well. And he said, nice to see you again. And I didn't recall having seen this plumber before. Nonetheless, I welcomed him in. I showed him to the toilet with the problem. He went ahead and just started to fix it. And I continued on my business phone call. And however long later, an hour or so, he was done. And he said, all set. Everything's ready to go. Have a nice day. He let himself out. And as he was leaving, he said, God bless you. And I was on the phone and I thought, wow, that's so cool. Not that people don't talk like that or treat each other like that, but in there are professions when that's not traditionally thought of as somebody who has good bedside manner. It's not bedside manner. There's got to be a better word, and there is. We're going to learn about them today, actually, so that we could have... actually, Merriam-Webster Dictionary actually says, in a broad sense, bedside manner means a person's manner in dealing with others. So again, I still think there's a better term. We found it, actually. Our guest had found it a long time ago. So we'll be talking about that today.
We need a better term, because what are manners?
Oh.
Because are they used today?
Yes.
Yet another really important conversation. Very much looking forward to tonight.
I'd like to think manners are used today and every day, but
politely,
yes. Nonetheless, this is the conversation, actually. The episode is titled Strengthen Your Soft Skills for Your Personal and Professional Life. And that could go on to say for your medical doctor life or your plumbing life or any kind of life. Episode 828, our interview guest is a global leader in company culture and soft skills development. She's a keynote speaker. She's CEO of Rise Up For You and best-selling author of Emotional Intelligence. Welcome, Neda Lina Nasruddin, to the Life Changes Show.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here and talk to you both.
Thank you for being here and for opening up this conversation for this next level of having bedside manner.
Hey, I'm thrilled. I'm excited to recoin the term bedside manners and have a deep dive conversation about soft skills.
So soft skills. What are soft skills? That was kind of a soft opening to what soft skills are.
So soft skills are the opposite of what we would call hard or technical skills. So, you know, when you go to school, you go to school, you learn math, you learn science, you get a degree in certain areas and competencies that for the most part are using what we call the right side of your brain, right? The calculation, the logical side of your brain. Soft skills are the skills that you can't necessarily get a degree in. It's the things that you learn over time with life that have to do with emotions, influence, how you converse with other individuals, how you manage yourself in your stress. So essentially, soft skills and emotional intelligence is the way that you manage and are aware of your emotions and behaviors, and then how you're able to adjust your emotions and behaviors according to others in the room as well.
So where would we pick these soft skills up normally?
That's a great question. So some of it can start from when you're a child. Matt, keep in mind that soft skills, there's a lot under that umbrella. So some examples of soft skills are self-confidence, stress management, communication, empathy, active listening, resilience, growth mindset. So, I can go on. There's a number of them.
Hold on. I'm writing them down. Start over.
Yes, no,
I'm
just... I know. There's a ton. And it really starts from your childhood, to tell you the truth, and your environment. So for example, let's use resilience as a perfect example. Let's say you have a child that's born like overseas in a war-torn country, and they survive all of those challenges. Their resilience and their ability to bounce back from life's challenges is probably going to be more developed and stronger than somebody that maybe grew up in California and Beverly Hills on a ranch with a lot of wealth and didn't have like any challenges. So the resilience muscle for the person overseas in a war-torn country might be more developed. Okay, so that's just like one example of how a childhood can impact where you learn these skills. But it's important to know that, you know, going to school, socializing helps you build these skills, understanding, I know you talked about bedside manners, but understanding manners and how we socialize and the norms of socializing are important. But even today, that is more and more becoming hindered because of technology. So that's really the crisis that's happening right now is that, you know, think about it, you know, 20, 30 years ago, kids went outside and they played. They learned how to get along. They learned how to socialize. They learned how to communicate. They learned how to bounce back up, solve problems. Today, a lot of it is in front of a screen. And so children are not learning the fundamentals of team bonding, getting along with other kids, having, you know, communication and talking. All of those things are being lost. And now they're becoming adults in the workplace. So a lot of these skills can be built over time in the household, in school, but with the use of technology at a rapid rate and the lack of reinforcement with these social skills is creating a hindrance in our ability to have emotional and social intelligence.
Well, also the workforce, absolutely, and interpersonal skills with friends and family and relationships, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, because it's all interconnected. So again, if I were to tell you some soft skills, right? And just so you know, 75% of your success is determined by your emotional and social intelligence, which is the main soft skill, 75%. And research shows that. So most people think that their success is determined by their college degree that's in science or architecture or you name it, whatever it is. But that's really just the first step to getting yourself seen or getting yourself in the door. But, you know, when we work with companies around the world, the number one reason why they're firing people is not because they're not educated in the skill. It's because they struggle with motivation, communication, they have a bad attitude. It all has to do with people, people problems, not that they don't know what they're doing from a technical aspect.
Motivation would be a soft skill too.
Motivation is a soft skill. So we have, I could just list some off for you quickly, emotional awareness, accurate self-assessment. So that means being aware of how you show up versus what people think of you. So for example, you might think that you're showing up, but other people think you're showing up completely different. Are you aware of that? Are you cognizant of that? Those are what we call the blind spots. Self-confidence, believe it or not, is a soft skill, and it's one of the major ones. Emotional management, stress management, internal motivation, growth mindset, optimism, resilience, or soft skills, empathy, active listening, diversity, equity, and inclusion, believe it or not, a big part of that is soft skills, nonverbal communications, how you move your body in a room, how you are socially connected physically with people in a space is a soft skill, leadership, coaching, managing conflict, solving problems, and your ability to influence, these are all soft skills. And there's more.
Wow. Okay, so yeah. We talked about how one may have learned them as a child. We talked about it a little bit, but and of course our parents, I'm thinking cartoons would have been a great place to learn these, and TV shows. I think we learned the opposite, right?
Yeah, we do, unfortunately. And so you could get a leg up depending on your childhood, right? So if you, for example, are born into a family that's very interactive and hands-on, like my family, for example, my dad would wake us up at 6 o'clock in the morning, even when we were 10, to go clean the backyard, even though we lived in California and there is barely any debris that we needed to clean. But he was just teaching us like discipline, like how to wake up and like take action and be proactive and like kind of like have that motivation, right? We didn't have phones when I was younger, so that wasn't a challenge. We used to play outside. They would make us sit down and like have conversations, and they would ask us conversations. If I would ask them a question, my parents would always say, "What do you think?" So we had to exercise our critical thinking. So my childhood, for example, we learned a lot of soft skills just from the interaction with our parents. And some people don't have that interaction. So sometimes your childhood can give you that leg up. In school, that can really help if it's taught. The problem is that we're not learning these skills in school. Have you ever taken a class in high school that taught you self-confidence, that was a self-confidence course or emotional intelligence or a leadership course? That's not part of our core curriculum. Now, the great news is that you can learn these skills just like you learn any other skill, but we often don't think about them. And so what happens is we go through our childhood, we go through school, we don't learn them. And then we get into the workplace and we still don't learn them. We don't learn them in college. And so for the most part, we never really learn them. And then all of these things are hindering our ability to lead, to make an impact in the world, and to live a thriving and fulfilled life.
So if we don't even know that they exist, or we don't even know how important they are, then we might not give a consideration to, I wonder why this isn't happening for me, or I wonder why people are treating me like this. It might be a soft skill.
That's the golden question. So I always tell people, if you feel like you're doing amazing work, you have all the degrees in the world, you put your best foot forward, and you're still not moving forward, or you still don't feel like you're being seen, heard, or relevant, there's probably a soft skills gap, which is why you're not moving forward, right? We all, I'm sure as well, both of you have met that individual that's like, wow, I work so hard, I'm educated, I have all the degrees, but no one's looking at me for a job promotion. Or when I'm in a meeting, they don't, you know, listen to my voice or my opinion. That's probably because there's a disconnect in the human aspect.
There are so many soft skills. So decidedly, if some of us have gotten some in our childhood, some in our young adult years, and even some as adults, there are so many we can learn. So this sounds like something that could be revisited until death. In the meantime, though, being aware of them, and also, is it asking the questions? Because you have a great story in the book that we're going to be talking more about in a moment, Emotional Intelligence, which was a bestseller, and I could see how important this is. And you, the story about you, your employees, or your the people that you were leading,
yes,
were not seeing you as you saw yourself.
Correct. And that was the accurate self-assessment, the blind spots that I was mentioning earlier. You know, I thought I was 27 years old and I became the executive of an education corporation. I had 200 team members under me. I thought I was the most amazing leader ever. I was like, yep, I'm awesome. I'm a great executive. You know, I really want to help people. That was my intent. But nobody would come in my door. Nobody would come to my office. Nobody would ask me questions. And I really wanted to coach and mentor. And I didn't understand why nobody was coming in to like have these conversations with me as their leader. And then one day somebody said, well, Netta, you're kind of intimidating. And I said, that's not true.
Right.
Right. I'm like, no, I'm not intimidating. And then like a week later, another person came and they said, well, you know, you're a little bit intimidating. And I said, I don't think that's true. And then the third person said it. And I went, huh, okay. Now, three people have told me that I'm intimidating and I don't see myself that way. So maybe there's a disconnect. So I decided to do an anonymous survey. I was the only executive that did it. All the other executives opted out of doing it. And I basically put myself on the chopping block. And I put, okay, like, I want you to assess me as a leader. Out of 200 people, 75% said I was intimidating, not relatable, and I looked mad all the time.
Wow.
I know. And I cried all night because I was only 27, so I was still young. But after I got done being in my feelings and crying, I was super grateful because I got information that I wouldn't have known otherwise if I didn't receive feedback. And what I realized is how I thought I was showing up, in fact, was not accurate. So my awareness of myself was not appropriate in correspondence to the team. So that's when I started to realize, okay, well, then I need to shift this. How do I shift this? So I realized that I wear a lot of black. I realized that I would walk through the hallways and I would be with my head down, like looking at my tablet or looking at my phone. So I never connected with the people that I walked past. I realized that when I went into meetings, I didn't build any like relatability. I just jumped straight into the meeting and it was like black and white and then I left. So there were certain things that I recognized that didn't allow me to connect, even though deep down inside, that's what I wanted.
So the intent was there, but obviously the perception from the others of you, and boy, that opens up all kinds of things, because it could be cultural, it could be a lot of things, it could be age related, it could be a lot of things.
Yeah, and so you just have to and that's why feedback is so important, because feedback gives you data. And then when you have the data, you can then look at it and say, okay, does this make sense? Do I need to shift, right? So I'll give you another smaller example. I used to be a professor for community college, and every year I had about 150 students. And out of 150 assessments, because you know how you rate your professor at the end of the college year, out of 150, I usually had about 148 that gave me rave reviews. I had one of the top classes at the college. And there were two people that would always say like, they're, you know, not a great professor, or I didn't resonate with them. Okay, well, if I have 148 that are giving me all positive marks and two people, we can then look at that data and say, okay, well, maybe those two people just have a certain disconnect with me. I don't necessarily have to go make a change, right? Now, if it was reverse, if it was 148 people that were saying, I don't resonate with this teacher, then that's a problem. So that's why it's important to look at data so that you can really study it and see, like, where does it make sense for me to start creating these shifts?
What kind of data would you say is available within a relationship or a family situation or even friendships?
Yeah, I would definitely start with friendships, and I would start with people that are at work. Now, here's the interesting thing, because that you just brought this up, is I hear leaders say all the time, well, my emotional intelligence at work is much higher than it is at home. And I always tell them, well, the person is the professional and the professional is the person. So it's not that your emotional intelligence is better at work or better at home. It's that there's things at home that trigger you more often that get you out of your mastering the emotional intelligence. And that's what we need to solve, right? Because we're all triggered by things. So I think it is important to get feedback. And I think it's important to get feedback in places that maybe starting with work, if that makes you more comfortable. And then I would definitely go to the friends, and then I would definitely go to family. I would do what we call 360. I would do all of the above. I've done it with friends. I've done it for my company with my team anonymously. And it's the best thing that you can do for yourself.
What do you do? Do you say, hey, rate me?
Well, it's a little bit different because we run the company and we actually have an emotional intelligence assessment. So all of our clients and internally within the company, we have an emotional intelligence assessment that we send out that's anonymous. Wow. And yeah, we score ourselves on it. And then we send a link to like 10 people and they score us anonymously. And then it whips out like a 30-page report within seconds. And the report shows us your score, and then it shows us the difference between you and the people that assessed you, and it's all anonymous. But if you don't have access to that kind of tool, I mean, you can definitely check out our website and we have it there. But if you don't have access, you can just go to somebody and ask them 5 questions. And you could even go online and type in 5 questions that are good for receiving feedback. Take those 5 questions and send them to like the top 7 people. Maybe it's like 3 people at work, 3 of your friends, and 1 or 2 family members, and see what you get back.
Wow. So, by the way, that website is riseupforyou.com, and that's the word for. And then you can also go to Nadalena, Nadalena.com. She's on all the socials as well, especially LinkedIn and Instagram. We have our links at the Life Changes show page on right there for Neda. So you're saying in one of the things that I was reading how this affects burnout, misalignment, disengagement. I mean, that sounds devastating.
That emotional intelligence impacts that, or the lack of emotional intelligence does?
The lack of. Well, both. I mean, yes. Well, yeah, the lack of.
Yeah, so because if I can break it down for you really quickly, and I know it's a lot of information. Emotional intelligence, let's just start there. So there's a number of soft skills, but emotional intelligence is the biggest one, and it encompasses most soft skills, okay? There's 4 pillars to emotional intelligence, what we call the 4 major pillars. So if you're listening, imagine this. Imagine that you have this big tree, and the tree has 4 major branches. The first branch is self-awareness. The second branch is self-management. Those 2 branches only have to do with you, nobody else, okay? Then the 3rd big branch is social awareness, and the 4th big branch is relationship management. And those 2 branches have to do with you in other people, like how you deal and relate to other people. So for example, when you talk about burnout, that would be under pillar 2, self-management. Stress, all of burnout, stress, all of those things fall under that 2nd pillar, self-management. Because if we aren't clear on our values and we aren't able to manage our boundaries, what happens? We get burnout. It's also connected to the 1st pillar, which has self-confidence under self-awareness. If we aren't confident in ourselves, and this is why we see a lot of burnout, to tell you the truth, because people are not confident in themselves and they people please because they're afraid that people are going to think that they're not kind or that they're not going to like them. And so then they say yes to people please, even though they know that they really can't take it on. That's how burnout happens. That's how a lack of boundaries happens. And all of those start with pillar 1 and 2 when it comes to emotional intelligence. So when we learn how to build self-confidence, which is emotional intelligence, when we learn how to define our values and what's important to us, and we learn how to communicate effectively, then we can manage the burnout versus just going because we're afraid of the consequence.
Well, it sounds like misalignment is right there too. Is that misalignment with who we are? And
yes, and that's part of pillar 2, self-management. Part of pillar 2 is integrity and transparency within yourself. So I'll give you a perfect example. If I were to ask most people, what are the top 3 things that are the most important to you? Okay, and we do this all the time. You know what the top 3 responses I get are?
Yeah.
They say faith, you know, like God or whatever faith they believe in. They say family and they say health. I say, okay, great. Those are the top 3 things that are most important to you. Now tell me what percentage of your week you actually spend on your faith, on your health, and your family. And they look at me and they say, yeah, you're right. I spend like 1% and the other 99% is on work. Mm. So that's where there's a lack of integrity. There's a lack of management, right, of your time and your values. And this is how people start to build lives that are not fulfilled, because they haven't actually built a life around their values and who they want to be and what they want. And then the self-confidence to have the courage to actually build that and take action. You see the difference?
Absolutely. Well, even if they, for whatever reason, they have to work at this job or they're students or something, if their focus really is family or something like that, then during that downtime or during those in-between times, how do we bring it in, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that is the self-management part, right? Okay, so how do I manage myself? How do I manage my time? All of that is connected.
So let's talk about the other side of the tree now that deals with other people.
Yes. So then you have social awareness, which is empathy, how to read a room, and basically being of value and service to whether it's your workplace, your community, or the world. And then you have that fourth branch, which is relationship management, which is really all things leadership. So that's influence, coaching and mentorship, building relatability, being able to solve problems with your team, team management. So those are the pillars that have to do with you and other people. And the most interesting thing is that whenever we work with leaders, they always want to jump to the last pillar. They always say like, okay, we don't want to do self-awareness and self-management. We want to do leadership. And we say, that's not how it works. Because if the leader doesn't have the capacity to manage their emotions, if the leader doesn't have self-confidence, those will directly impact their capacity to communicate and lead their team. Right? And that's why we hear a lot the Gallup study that where they say 76% of the workforce is disengaged, and then 76% of the workforce leave a job because of their manager. And that's typically because the manager has not worked on their emotional and social intelligence to lead accurately, to lead with inspiration, to lead with empathy, to be an active listener. And so team members will leave a company, not because of the company, but because of the people that are leading them or managing them directly.
So it's interesting. Your book starts out with talking about you as is it a singer or dancer? Singer, right?
Yeah, I used to be a performer. I used to tour the world and do musical theater.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. Well, and so a lot of people will think company, business, but in that field, whether it's sports or performance, it's just as important in every field, what you're
100%.
Talking
about. 100%. And this is where I kind of had the epiphany around soft skills, because I'll tell you, when I was a performer, and Filippo, you might be able to resonate with this because I know that you've been on stage a lot as well. Mm-hmm. You know, when you walk into a room as a performer and there's 500 people in the room that all know how to sing and dance, we can assume that technically we're all pretty solid, right? Now let's correlate this to a professional that's trying to get a job. Imagine you are sending your resume into a job and there's 500 resumes that all have the exact same degree and the exact experience. Let's take this to entrepreneurship. Let's say you run a business. Well, there's a lot of businesses that do the exact same thing, right? So this is when I realized as a performer, I walked into this room with 500 people that were all amazing singers. Like one after another, they would stand up and I'm like, holy moly, these people are amazing. But only 36 people would be casted for a tour. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, if there's 500 singers and dancers, but only 36 are going to be casted, how are they going to cast it? We all sound amazing. And that's when I realized that, aha, this is going to be more than just me singing and dancing. I have to show up differently. And that's when I realized that, okay, most people that are walking on stage, they really don't have confidence. They're not looking at the directors. They're not looking at the other people. They're not connecting. This is when I realized that, okay, there's something different here that I need to pull in. And that's where a lot of my soft skills came into play. I started to observe and analyze. And for like 7-8 years, I was one of the best performers in the organization consecutively, not because I was the best singer, because I cracked the code that in order to be seen, be heard, and be relevant, I had to do something that was not connected to me singing. That was my ability to build relationships. I would go up to the directors afterwards and say, hey, do you have any feedback from me? I really want to grow. So I displayed a growth mindset. I helped other people in the room. I read the room. And then I went on tour for years and years and years. And my soft skills got even better, because imagine going to Russia, going to Japan, and they don't speak English, right? And so you really have to tap into your soft skills then, because the communication is different. So I had to understand social nuances and being able to look them in the eye. And there was different things that I had to build over that time. And it's the same thing in the workplace, in your community, and your home. These skills are the things that are going to help you, what I think, be the top 10% in everything you do.
Emotional intelligence, the path to fulfillment, influence, and lasting success is the title of the book that Netta brings to the world. And that book is available where books are sold online. And you, of course, can go to Life Changes page and learn more about Netta. Or you can go directly to riseupforyou.com, or Nettalena is NADALENA.com, or find her on LinkedIn and Instagram. And, of course, we have her links at the Life Changes show page. There's also a video there of the top 4 skills for career and business success, where she talks about the top 4 skills. You've given us so many things to think about, and you've brought so much to the conversation. Obviously, getting the book and learning more from you and following you and all of that is something that we encourage people to do. How,
as they end
the show, listening to the show today, and they're going to think, what do you want them to think is the first area, for those that don't know what emotional intelligence is, or don't connect with the other things, what's the first thing you want them to think and focus on for themselves tonight, today?
So I would actually give them an action, and it's totally free. And I thank you so much for talking about the website. If you go to riseupforyou.com, there's a tab that says free resources. There's 2 quizzes there. One's on self-confidence and one's on emotional intelligence, which are the top soft skills. Just take those quizzes, because those quizzes are going to ask you questions that are going to get you to start thinking about your self-confidence and your emotional intelligence. And then it's going to give you a score. I would say start there, because the first place to start is understanding what it is, but then being able to assess yourself in the moment. That's what I would say, is taking that one action step. And then based off of your score, you'll know, I really have to work on my boundaries, or I'm really struggling with my self-confidence in general. And then we can take action steps from there.
You know, Netta, I could hear some people say, well, she's beautiful. Well, she's well-spoken. Well, she's got this. And I'm sure you've actually heard that it's easy for you. What would you say to the people that might be doubting themselves at this moment?
This is what I'm going to say. When I was 31 years old and I was a top executive, I sold my house, dropped everything, moved out of the country for an opportunity called marriage. After 4 weeks, I lost everything. I had $100. Both of my parents died by the time I was 31 years old, and I was 31 years old with no money, completely in debt. I had a credit score of like 560, no job, my heart broken, and my parents, who were the most important, gone. And I buried both of them by the time I was 31. And I built this company not because I had a degree in business. I don't know anything about business. I don't know anything about entrepreneurship. But because I had certain soft skills and self-confidence, I was able to build this company. We're in over 50 countries today, and rise above all of those challenges. So it might be easy to say, well, Netta, you're this, and Netta, you're that. But the reality is that at one point, I was at the very, 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 very bottom, with no safeguard, no safety net, no parents to pick me up, no money, no nothing. And I was able to rise above. And so if I can do it, I know you can do it.
Wow. Netta, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
What an absolute pleasure. Looking forward to more from your camp. RiseUpForYou.com and Nedalena, NadaLena.com. Nedalena Nasruddin, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Whew. Wow. That's a whole other interview then, Mark. I mean, like, now we start another one.
There's so much that came through tonight. The phrase that are the two words that kept coming to me during all of the different explanations and the idea of rating and whatnot is emotional accountability.
Mm.
You know, not just emotional intelligence, but actually taking action on the responsibility and ownership of the actions that created the scenario, the reactions chosen, you know, all of those aspects, which, you know, then layer into all the other things she was saying. But the other thing that I had to ponder was why soft skills come from such hard lessons.
Ooh, nice.
At least they did outside of Cleveland as I was growing up. But we learned a lot of soft skills. But I was thinking about what you were saying about how, you know, most of the younger kids now have grown up in front of screens, so they're not put into those scenarios of having to learn and engage.
Yeah, that's, she was
such
saying
a powerful
that.
Point.
And actually, in our pre-show talk, she said it's like a muscle, and if we use it, if we have to use it,
exactly,
we work it. Wow, yeah, excellent. Well, with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Margaret, and I have been fighting for peace for over 10 years now, and I feel I have failed as it appears the whole world is at war. At times there is even war with our families. How can we stop these wars and replace them with peace and understanding that we are all truly all one?
Precious Margaret, I'm sorry to hear that you're feeling this way, and I want to acknowledge the immense commitment you've had to fighting for peace. It's deeply challenging, especially when the world seems to be at odds with your vision. While it can feel overwhelming to witness the ongoing conflicts around the globe, it's important to remember that peace work, though slow and often unseen, has profound effects over time. The idea of a world in which we all understand each other as one is a powerful and noble pursuit, and yet it's also complex and requires a multi-layered approach. A good first step is to remember that peace begins within us. The more we can cultivate peace in our own lives through mindfulness, compassion, and emotional regulation, the more we can project that outward, the sooner we will have peace. Often wars and conflicts arise from misunderstandings, fears, and past hurts. If we can model understanding and kindness in our interactions with others, it can ripple out in ways we might not immediately see. You can begin by practicing peace within your family, by encouraging conversations between opposing sides. Conflict resolution often starts with listening. People tend to be more open to peace when they feel heard and understood. Creating space for dialogue within your family can be a powerful way to dismantle division and co-create peace. One of the most effective ways to combat conflict is to break down the barriers that separate us. Instead of seeing others as the enemy, we need to cultivate a sense of shared humanity. Every person, regardless of background, holds potential for kindness and focusing on what unites us rather than divides us, and this can help pave the way for peace. As for world peace, there are many organizations and movements around the world that work tirelessly towards peace, justice, and reconciliation. Sometimes joining forces with these organizations or even supporting them in small ways can have a collective impact. These groups are often doing the vital behind-the-scenes work that can eventually lead to major change. And, dear Margaret, let's remember that even when things seem bleak, the work you're doing, no matter how small it might seem, does matter. Change is often slow, and while we might not see instant results, every act of kindness, every effort to promote understanding can accumulate and build momentum. History is full of examples of change happening after long periods of struggle, sometimes in ways that weren't immediately visible. And we also must remember that while grassroots efforts are powerful, it's also crucial to push for peace on a larger scale. Engage with leaders, whether through petitions, peaceful protests, or other avenues that call for diplomatic solutions. Leaders who prioritize peace can often affect the course of history. And, dear friend, please don't lose sight of your own worth and the difference you are making. And now let us consider upgrading our words instead of fighting for peace, which is not a good thing because it's contradictory to peace itself. How we consider using the words, let us consider using the words advocating for peace or aiming for peace or encouraging peace. In which case, when you begin doing that, then there is no failure. Because every one of us that stops fighting in our families and in our world is one person closer to universal peace. Though wars rage, so do countless quiet efforts to promote understanding, unity, and peace. So I thank you, Margaret, for this important question. And please know that your work matters. And I love that you're willing to do what's necessary to promote peace.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her peacefully at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And with that, for our performance segment, we have a performer who's a dynamic singer-songwriter and a multi-instrumentalist. Welcome, Kayla Diana, to the Life Changes Show.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure having you on the show. And we have our friend and past guest a couple times, actually, Colin Martin, to thank for introducing you to us.
Yes.
So thank you, Colin.
Thank you, Colin. We love Colin. His music if you haven't heard it already.
Yes, of course. Check out Colin actually all over the place. And especially we've got him on the Life Changes Show. And so you have so much that you are bringing to this space. And we're going to talk about that when we talk about somatic voice, because interestingly, it supports people in a way that is also needed today, like we've been talking about throughout the whole show. But you, before we get into that, you came to that because of something you were doing to support you. You told me you were born how?
I was born deaf in my left ear without an auditory nerve. In fact, it was considered a medical miracle to the doctors that diagnosed this. Yeah, wow. Very interesting.
Wow. So it I'm assuming it affected your singing, but it affected your speaking, no?
It affected, if you watch me talk, I oftentimes will like kind of talk out of the right side of my mouth, trying to get the sound. Apparently I've noticed this as I've gotten older. So yes, definitely. It took me about 20 years to learn to sing in tune because of this. Yeah, I was very determined. I just really wanted to, you know, disappear into the music and become something bigger than myself. So that's really where I started, but it was definitely it still is in some ways very challenging for me as a musician that I can only hear it out of one ear.
Why the music?
Well, a lot of this I attribute to my grandmother who helped raise me. And I was raised being taught that music is life. And I just loved it. I loved to become enraptured by something bigger than me and to feel that sense of belonging that music gives.
Well, mm-hmm. What do you write the most about? I know that some of your music, that you have a lot of different kinds of music, but
yes.
What do you write the most about, or what are you going to be writing the most about?
Right. So it's changed over the years. You know, I first started writing music, I think, when I was 16 or 17. And I started playing music in like dirty little whiskey bars up north in Idaho and Montana. And then I got involved with like more like ceremony and the food, organic food, food sovereignty movement on the islands, and became a farmer. And then I started singing about that. And then I really started singing a lot more of like more of the folk, you know, adjacent formatting of really telling stories. But where it comes from is from like the wildness of human emotion and being able to relate. It's hard. It's so funny. I'm like, how do I answer that question? But it's, there's a lot of different ways that I write about. Sometimes it's, I want to get people to sing along. So whatever it is, it's, I just write. I don't really try to make it sound like anything. I think I try to do more of like a style, instrumentally, and then the emotion, the storyline will come from there.
Well, we had already heard of you before Colin mentioned you before we, without knowing, because you have a viral song out there that comes up in the rotation at on Spotify, etc. So tell us about that.
Right. So that one is a song with Equanimous and our friend DTO. And Equanimous and I have been friends for many years, and he actually sent me a beat. It's actually a remix of a DTO song, which is funny, and not a lot of people know that. But he sent me that beat, and I was in Nevada City, California, where I used to live, and I was at a stoplight. And those first lyrics, there is magic here, I can feel coming through the cracks, I can hear it sing. That part came through first. And then I spent the day, you know, I sent him that voice note. And I said, what do you think about this? He goes, I love it. I'll send it to Dave, see if he likes it. He loved it. So I finished writing it. And that song became this like huge, it made a huge impact on me and my psyche. And it, sometimes I listen to it when I'm having a dark hour. But the last thing I'll say for now about that is that there's all these reels of that song. And I read a lot of the stories. There's like tens of thousands of reels of that. And a lot of them was like people that were going through cancer or like the death of a loved one or like something really, I'm getting goosebumps. It's like really intense things. And that song had been medicine for them. And it's so wild how one little moment of sitting at a stoplight can change so many lives. And, you know, that's my biggest goal, is being able to impact people and give them something in this, you know, place to inspire them. So
Kayla, it's a little thank bit about you that. For sharing that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, speaking of down moments, there was a, I know you said some bad words, so I wonder if you could say it without them, but somebody said to you, I don't want to hold you back, but somebody said to you that you shouldn't sing at one point.
Oh, and, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I used to have people come up to me on the street. I remember this one guy, I was at a cafe, and in the morning I was like, I mark in my consciousness, I can sing as freely as I want. I can be free. So I go to get a coffee. This is actually 10 years ago. And I was actually in Boulder, Colorado, where I live now. And I was singing very freely at the top of my lungs with my ukulele and my like espresso. And this guy was like, excuse me, could you please stop? You're disturbing the environment. And I was like, what? And I looked at the guy next to me and I was like, did you hear this? Thinking I was going to get some sort of camaraderie from this gentleman. And he was like, actually, yeah, I'd like to just smoke my cigarette in peace. And I was thoroughly shocked. And this woman came out of nowhere with like white hair. And she was a little shaky. And she was like this elderly woman. And she said, just hold your space. You don't have to go anywhere. So I refer to the story. That's insane that it even happened at this point. It's like I've told the story so many times, it feels like some mythos, but it's like a lot of the worst fear is that somebody's not going to like what you're doing, and that's actually true. There's going to be people that think that you suck, and it doesn't matter. It's like that's the worst case scenario. I've survived it a few times. So just sing anyway, it really doesn't matter.
Wow, have you put that in a lyric yet? Just hold your space.
I actually have a song called Let It Be Love, and that's the first
Nice.
I think it's on Bandcamp. I'm not sure, but it's and with another amazing artist that produced it named Sri Kala. I think you guys probably know him, but
Nice. Well, I know you wanted to share Breathe with us here on the show, but people can find that everywhere. And so thank you. And so you came
you're
up
welcome.
with two other songs to share, and one of them the world hasn't heard yet. So that's very
No,
exciting.
they
But
have not.
first we're going to hear, this is interesting, Find, comma, Me. So
Oh,
instead of, I mean, from, com yeah, sorry,
yes, it's okay.
from, comma, me. The comma, I think, is important. So tell me what that title refers to.
This is really hilarious, actually. So I wrote that song at 5 o'clock in the morning, which is when I write most of my songs. And I was gonna call this song for my Irish ex-husband. But all my friends told me not to do it. And I did it anyway on the Canva thing. And they were like, Kayla, come on. We're like we're very good friends. But I said, okay, cool. So one of the lyrics in the song says, from me. And I always enjoy a cheeky title. So you'll hear it. I also made myself upside down in the artwork just because I could. So you'll have to. I was like, if I'm doing something, I gotta rebalance one way or another. So that's what I decided to do.
Okay, well, this is from, comma, me.
Yeah.
This is Kayla
Oh, I
Diane.
recorded this. This was the first take, by the way. This was a one take wonder.
Oh, this is the one take. Okay.
Just one take.
Here's Kayla Diana's one take here on the Life Changes Show, pre-recorded.
Hasn't snowed this hard, in 60 years. Sweet relief came in white blankets and frozen cheese and beauty you wouldn't believe. It brought me straight down to my knees. Hold me close, my I'm leaning in. Is there something you'd like to hear from me? Oh.
Kyla Diana. Find her at Kyla Diana Frequencies. Mm-hmm. And Kyla is K-A-Y-L-A and Diana, yes. D-I-A-N-A Frequencies on Instagram. And her music is all over Spotify, etc., YouTube. It didn't sound cheeky to me.
The title.
Just the title.
The backstory.
Did, yeah.
the backstory is cheeky.
One take. Lovely. Well, let's talk about somatic voice work. So obviously we know where you came from in order to be actually able to sing and work with your voice. And now you're helping other people with theirs.
Yes. Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. So there's a lot. There's a lot. So I'm going to try to keep it brief. So the number one most important thing is that, you know, people started coming to me and they'd like have a hand clamped on their throat and they'd be like, can you help me? And this started happening well before I decided to throw myself into the fires of entrepreneurialism. By the way, that last speaker, was it Anata Lena?
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you say her name? That
Meta,
was incredible. Uh-huh. Netta, yeah. Lena, that was, yeah, really, really impactful for me. I was like, I have soft skills. Oh my God. So just want to say shout out to that queen. That was really inspiring for me. So nice. Speaking of entrepreneurialism. So I decided, okay, I'm going to do this. And, you know, for me, I went to this like really epic vocal coach that was supposed to be able to help me because I had this block in my voice where I would lose my voice every night at like 6 o'clock. And I just couldn't sing past like, ooh, I couldn't sing higher than that. And I had a very physical experience where my voice would literally not come out, except if I was riding a bicycle or having a medicinal experience. And I would be like, okay, why can I sing sometimes and not other times? But I loved music and I was just so, so invested in understanding. And so I even went to this teacher. He couldn't even help me. And then I was like, oh no, well, I guess I'm going to have to really figure this out on my own. And I went on this crazy journey and it involved all these different facets, like the spirit, my intuition, my relationships, all the things that affect the voice. Cause the voice is way more than just what we're singing. It's like our soul coming into the body and how we express ourselves in the world, how we birth, you know, how we birth things into creation, right? So there's like, and also there's all these stories around like who's a musician and who's not. So it took me on this like crazy journey. And I studied with amazing, some amazing teachers eventually, like in my later 20s, and deep, deep connections with the land and sitting in different ceremonies and just really understanding. And then I started learning about the nervous system and how these stories are really like in our tissues and they're in our brain, in the subconscious. So I started also when I would sing, people wanted to sing along. And so people would start singing my songs with me And I would go around and, you know, sing wherever. And then all of a sudden I'd have like 10 people singing with me. So it happened very organically. And then I decided to fully dive into learning how to give voice to the information that I had. So I had this like really dense, like amazing transmission of this whole body of work that I then had to learn how to like logistically explain it and back it up so that I could be in integrity while I was teaching. And nice. So that was a whole other thing. And that's a little bit vague, but essentially it's having people understand that the voice is about way more than usually what they think it is. And everybody has one. And it's really like every single person, you know, has this experience of being in a human body and being a part of the divine. And then the second half of that is expressing their experience. And I believe that in each person's voice is the medicine that the world needs, especially right now. So I made it my mission to help people with that. And so now 10 years later, I've ran multiple retreats and taught countless workshops and helped like hundreds of people at this point with their voices.
Beautiful. Thank you. So where do people learn about that?
Yeah. So again, you can find me on Instagram. And that has like all of my links for all the things and like my landing pages and my LinkedIn and all that kind of stuff. So Kayla Diana Frequencies.
Okay, great. Well, more power to you, and look forward to learning more about that. And thank you for making that your mission and sharing it with us as well. So interestingly and fitting, we come to dreams.
Yes, dreams.
Tell us about dreams.
So this one, this is a bold Riley move. I call it a bold Riley when it's a bold move. So this song is not out yet. It's not even coming out till next month. So super secret, super special share. This song is very near and dear to me. And this one is like, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. So this song is really about like the preciousness of our dreams, because our dreams are so important. And right now, more than ever, and even and especially when things feel the hardest and the scariest and the most impossible, is when we really need to dig our heels in and say, no, I am going to create what I came here to create. So this song is also about relationship, because I believe that relationship is the through relationship is how we actualize our purpose. So these are these two parts, right? So this song is so, and it's huge for me because this is like my first solo single, like of, well, actually second because of From Me, but like my personal project. It was produced by Tyson Leonard, who did a lot of Ayla Nario's earlier work. He's an absolute genius. And yeah, so there's a lot to be said about that, but essentially I'm really excited and we can just play it without me talking too much.
I'm glad you're not nervous about this. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a universal premiere.
Yes.
Here on the Life Changes Show, Kayla Diana's Dreams.
Today I heard another story, all about the wrong and the right, calling it a good fight. It's just making me tired, making me tired. I'm done fighting, I just wanna love you, love you. Shoulders, don't wait till you get older. Dreams, dreams. grace. Give it love, give it grace. Drop my defenses while I'm feeling reckless. Lean into it, whatever it is. Dreams, dreams, magical things. The more you believe, the more you see. Don't carry the world on your shoulders. Don't wait till you get older.
Diana, wow, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Find her at Kayla Diana Frequencies on Instagram, and there she has all her links in her bio to find out about her and her music and of course the somatic voice work. What a pleasure getting to know you. How special to have you share these songs. Can't wait to hear more coming from you. Actually, this EP, which we got to share the premiere of, will be releasing in March, right?
Yes. I think the first like soft date is mid-March, potentially the 19th, but to check out Instagram for more information.
Check out Instagram for more information.
Thanks so much for having me. Oh, I'm glad we pulled this off.
Such a pleasure. I can't wait to see you in concert someday soon.
Absolutely. Yeah. Lots more. Plug into High Vibe Fest if anybody's going to be out near Bakersfield around June 6th, 7th, 8th. I'm going to be there playing with my band, my new project, Golden Hour, and then as well as Honey Wild Music, which is a trio that I play with Heather Christie and Anne Walsh. So come
nice.
To High Vibe Fest and hang out with us.
Okay. Well, awesome. Kayla, all the best to you.
Thank you so much for having me. All right. Bye, guys.
Ciao. With a big thank you to Kayla, Diana, and another big thank you to Netta Lena Nasruddin. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeur, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, as ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.